Reconstruction, Thursday night, 1 week on. Your boy Tom, you should do it.
What? No, I don't want him to.
No, he's the best choice.
Did you not hear what I just said? He's just lost his best friend that could traumatise him for life.
Well, maybe he should be allowed to decide.
No, that. I'm his mum. I decide.
Oh, so your commitment to this investigation stops outside these doors?
With respect, sir, move away from me now or I will piss in a cup and throw it at you.
Welcome to the Anglophiles, a podcast where two Americans break down British pop culture, TV, and movies. I'm Sheldon.
I'm Danny.
And we're the Anglophiles. I didn't have anything for today. Usually I have things. I guess I'm excited for the St. Louis Blues, who've made the Stanley Cup for the first time in 50 years. Okay, I got that out there. We can talk about British things. We never talk about sports.
So weird when I came home from work today and you were watching sports and cheering. And the last time I saw you do that was like 4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I tend not to do it, especially around you, because I know you really don't like sports or
I hate
competitions. And
I mean, I like Great British Bake Off.
Yeah,
that's my sports. Baking sports.
Okay.
But yeah, some things have happened this week. Game of Thrones has ended.
Yeah.
The finale aired. We watched
it. End of an era.
Yeah. It was a long time to watch a show.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we were first introduced to it like a decade ago.
Yeah.
And like it or not, like love the last season or hate it, and the finale, whatever it made you believe, it changed TV history forever. Like, what it did gave us better fantasy than we've ever got. It raised the bar. It really does feel like a momentous occasion.
Yeah, it's true. It also, I think one thing Game of Thrones really did was really showcase a lot of really good British actors that Americans did not know before the show. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, only Harry Potter had done such a thing.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. What else happened? Oh, there was also a trailer for His Dark Materials.
Yeah, which you're very excited about.
I'm pretty excited. I read all of those books. I don't really know if it is, per se, a British show. I know that it's because it's fantasy. There are...
James
McAvoy is in it. And then also, what's her name? Who's from Luther. She's British. There's a bunch of British actors in it.
What is it with fantasy where we think, like, oh, they can't have an American accent? That's not believable.
Well, I think for Europe and America, fantasy is, it's based on European fantasy. And that comes from England. I mean, there's European fantasy that comes from Germany, like all of the Black Forest, like fairy tales. But yeah, I don't know what it is.
I can understand that.
Yeah. You know, that and that, like, all, I think for the most part, a lot of the best fantasy authors were coming out of England, you know, Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. So it makes sense.
Maybe at the time. I think there are a lot of very good American ones right now.
Oh, right now, absolutely.
We're in a great...
Brandon Sanderson.
Oh, my God. And even him, like, I don't know if you would call him fantasy or, like, a soft sci-fi. I mean, because he writes everything. But, yeah, we're in a weird renaissance of fantasy and sci-fi, and I love it. Like, I know we don't talk about a lot of that stuff on this podcast, but...
Yes.
We're in a great time for TV.
Yeah. So we have some British news to talk about. I have
a new segment.
Yeah, I love that we're doing British news now.
I think
because
it's good.
Because it is very interesting stuff.
Well, and it's so good to read about news that's not about our president.
It's true.
Like, especially, it's cyclical. We hear about it. We get it. Let's learn about something else. And so I think it's nice to, like, take a look across the pond. See what they're interested in, what's going on, what crazy things are happening, or what very not crazy things are happening.
Oh, what interesting things are happening.
Yeah.
So, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I can go first. Okay. I read today that Jamie Oliver, who is kind of legendary in Britain, I think a little bit, some Americans know him because he tried to change school lunches.
Oh,
and
there was a show.
Yeah, he had a whole show, and the most disappointing scene in the entire world is where he showed children
chicken nuggets.
Yeah, the chicken nuggets are made with pink goo.
I love that clip so much because, yeah, he's trying to show how disgusting a chicken nugget is. It's not nutritious. The process of it is gross. So he's trying to show this to these kids, like, this is nasty. And after he makes it, he shows it to them and he goes, Now, who would eat this?
Every one of them.
They all raise their hands because kids love chicken nuggets.
And his face at the camera is just like, oh, I don't know these kids. Like, maybe in England he was able to teach those kids, but we are too far gone. We like our deep fried fats.
Give me some fried breaded pink goo. There's adults that I think that you could show them the process of something and they would say, okay, I'm not eating that anymore. But kids, I don't know.
I think there's still plenty of adults that would watch that and go, I'll still eat a chicken nugget.
Yeah, that's true.
I think Americans eat whatever the hell they want to eat.
That's true.
Which is why we have an obesity problem. But
what's your Jamie Oliver
news? The Jamie Oliver news, he closed 25 restaurants recently.
Like, how many restaurants did he have?
Not much more than this. Like, most of them, like, most of his... He had these kind of... It's the high-end casual dining restaurants.
I ate at one.
And, I mean, he really revitalized and made this a thing in Britain. He wanted to separate it from, like, the very casual fish and chips places and the most high-end restaurants. Mm. He saw, like, there was a niche there.
Yeah.
And he could bring it to the masses.
Something in between.
And so he started it, I think, in, like, 2008 or 2009.
Yeah.
So it's been around for a little over a decade, this, like, style of restaurant and eatery that he's made.
Yeah.
But... his media empire is doing great. Him, like, selling cookbooks, selling himself as a professional chef.
Good.
But the only problem is, like, from what I've read and what I can tell, because of things like Great British Bake Off, because of how we can share food recipes so quickly,
yeah,
that, like, high-end casual dining is evolving rapidly.
Really?
And unless you are a chef who is paying attention and doing stuff and constantly pushing the envelope, trying new things... you're just getting phased out. And a lot of the other people kind of in that area are saying it's probably only his name that he lasted this long. Mm. Like, he just didn't fit with the restaurants he created.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
I ate it one when I was in London.
How was it?
I remember it being good.
Do you remember what you had at all?
I don't.
One of them, he was talking about, it's kind of an Italian eatery. Mm. One is, like, he called also a barbacoa.
I think it was just kind of, like, British fusion.
Okay.
It had, like, some pasta dishes.
Yeah.
It was pretty basic. I remember the atmosphere very well, because it looked really cool in there. It was very, like, industrial, but warm and friendly. Like, we had a great time, me and my family, but I don't remember the food at all.
Yeah.
So, but we were like, ooh, Jamie Oliver restaurant.
That's pretty telling, though.
Maybe it's kind of touristy.
Yeah.
Well,
what do you have?
So my news is, it's very brief, but I read an article that's, it's a British museum to unveil world's largest manga exhibition outside of Japan.
Interesting.
Or, sorry, manga.
I was going to say, manga. I didn't want to correct, but no. I think it's manga.
Yeah, so it says the exhibition will span manga's 200-year history, including focus on influence over anime and video games. And I thought that was fascinating because a couple episodes ago, we were talking about how K-pop has gotten big in England, like, as big there as it is in the U.S. So, yeah, I thought that was really cool that, like, there's one place that's going to have a manga exhibition. Not bigger than Japan, but, like, the biggest one outside of Japan, and it's England.
Yeah, wouldn't have guessed England.
I would have thought America.
I would have thought another European country. Like, there are a lot of weird museums in Europe. There are a lot of weird museums. Let's just put it at that.
That's true.
So, like, the fact that one didn't exist before now is more of a shock to me than that England is doing it.
Yep.
Like, if there is a museum in the world dedicated to genitalia... there has to be one for manga.
Yeah, there is one in Iceland.
No, but that's what I mean. Like, how did this not exist?
Yeah.
It's an art form that's been around for 200 years.
Well,
I guess people don't take it seriously.
It's really cool that they're going to have that museum, or that exhibit, I guess.
That sounds pretty killer.
And speaking of killer...
Wow.
I had to write that one down.
Yeah.
Speaking of killer, our topic for this episode is... the show Broadchurch, which is a British show.
An instant classic.
Mm-hmm. I would say so.
And we know that there are 3 seasons of this show, but we are...
There are 3 seasons. We are only covering season 1 on this podcast.
Honestly, I don't think many people can blame us for. Like, it changes into a very different show very quickly. And what we love so much is this murder mystery in the first season.
I mean, I will probably end up watching the other 2 seasons, and maybe we'll cover them this podcast.
I've never finished it. I watched the first 2, and I was like, I think I'm good. I don't like the second season.
Well,
they focus on a lot of stuff that, like, all the stuff that's interesting about the first season is gone, and it's like a really slow courtroom drama. It's all about the trial.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care about that.
So, yeah, we are only going to cover the first season on this episode. And just warning anyone listening to this, if you have not watched Broadchurch, you are welcome to listen to this episode, but there are going to be massive spoilers.
Yeah, big ones.
Every single spoiler from the first season in this episode. So if you are interested...
It is a murder mystery, and it is fun to play along if you haven't, like, if you're not spoiled already. Go watch the show before this episode.
So Broadchurch premiered in 2013. That was when season one came out. The premise, and this is just the premise I grabbed from IMDb. It was brief, so I liked it. Is the murder of a young boy in a small coastal town brings a media frenzy which threatens to tear the community apart.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very, very good kind of little summary. Because the crazy thing about this show is, and you see this in anything where, like, a kid has died or, like, someone is murdered in a small town. Like, it really rocks the community.
Yeah.
It happens in real life. It happens on TV and in movies. But one thing that Broadchurch really does is it does tear the community apart in that almost every person of interest in the case, whether they're a suspect or they know something, they are forced to, like, open up all of their deepest, darkest secrets and it confess to them and admit them just to, like, keep them out of suspicion. So
yeah,
it's really sad.
That's the most interesting part of the show, is that it doesn't really follow a traditional narrative structure, especially when in regards to, like, a murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've seen so many procedurals in the U.S. Like, we've seen a ton of Law & Order shows, all of these cop dramas where you can, like, guess the killer 15 minutes into the episode. And we're, like, trained by this.
Mm.
And so in a show where they really focus on how this one death disrupts a community and how it affects each individual character, how the death of a child and how you are, like, related to him or relate to him. Like, I think there are so many different ways and viewpoints that this kid changed the lives of these people.
Yeah.
And I think David Tennant mentions it pretty early on that this is a community that doesn't have murders like this. Crimes like this don't happen here.
Yeah.
And so for the first time in history, the curtain's pulled back and everything's laid bare.
Yeah. It's crazy. And there's so many interesting characters and interesting storylines. I think this also does a really good job of keeping the one who did it, the killer, keeping them... I mean, the killer's in every episode. I just did a rewatch, and the killer's in every episode.
Yeah.
And
most characters are, though, right?
It's, like, true. It's true. I'm just saying, like, I don't want to say he's, like, right in front of your eyes, because, like, no one could have guessed.
Yeah.
I don't think watching it, you could have guessed. But once you know who it is, and then you rewatch the show, like, he's just there. He's always there. And you just always, I don't know. I just think this one really, really threw me for a loop when I watched it.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I usually save, like, little fun facts till the end, but it's fitting now that every member of the cast took the role not knowing who the killer was.
Really?
Every single person who said yes to this knew I might be the killer.
What?
Even the leads. So, like, the guy who is the killer, the actor, Matthew Gravel,
he had
no idea until he got the final script.
Oh my god.
No one knew.
That is insane.
Yeah.
Because, and massive spoilers, we're gonna spoil it right now, the killer is the dad of the victim's best friend.
Yeah,
he's also the husband of, like, the lead detective. So,
yeah.
And it's one of those things where, like, he's basically a guy who, like, had an inappropriate relationship with this kid. Things got out of hand. And then he ended up, like, snapping and killing this kid. And I was thinking about that while I was watching the finale when he's, like, up in his jail cell in the prison. And I was like, wow, what an interesting role for him to take. To be like, yeah, sure, I'll take the role of this guy who, like, was kind of a creep. And, wow, it's just amazing to me that everyone signed on for that.
And apparently on set, they all joked and, like, pointed at each other, like, oh, it's you, isn't it? I bet it's you. And some people wanted to be the killer, like, no, it's me. I bet I did it. And they were all playing along with the scripts, trying to get clues and be like, okay, I think it's you because of these things that are setting up. Yeah. But a lot of them did not know. And he said he had no idea until he got that final script. And
that had to be like a hard
but then apparently
realization for him.
The writer, Chris Chibnall, he wrote every single episode of this. He's written a lot of Doctor Who and a lot of Torchwood.
Mm.
He like approached him and said something that I think is very important to this show is that the reason he didn't tell him is that he didn't want somebody playing this character like a creepy pedophile.
That makes sense.
Because he doesn't think that this man is.
Yep.
And the actor who played him didn't think so either. He's like, you know what? Like many people who commit a heinous crime,
mm-hmm.
he does not believe that he's in the wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He does not see... I mean, obviously he killed somebody, that is wrong.
Yeah.
But the relationship with the child, to him, he knew it was strange and not accepted by people.
Oh, yeah. He didn't want anyone to know.
But he never thought of it, at least the actor, like, never approached it in a sexual way. It was something else. And it led way too far.
I do think that part of why it's so good, and part of why you never suspected him, is because when someone is murdered, like, let's say when a child is murdered, you run through all the normal things. Like, okay, was this, like, a parent? Yeah. Was it a friend? Was it someone they knew? Like, you run through all of the logical things. And in this show, every suspect is kind of a logical thing. Like, is it the guy who runs the candy store, who, like, was once, like, convicted of, like, having an inappropriate relationship with a minor, like, or is it the priest? You know, like, you run through mm-hmm. all of the logical things that could possibly make sense, and it ends up being the one that doesn't make any sense. And sometimes in life, it's not the thing that makes any sense. Like,
see, to me, it makes perfect sense. Like, I don't know, because from what I've read or what you've told me, because you're very into true crime podcasts, mm-hmm. a lot of these murders in a small town, like, almost every time, it's a family member, somebody very close to the family.
It's usually, most people are killed by someone they know.
Yeah. And I mean, yes, everyone in this town knows everyone. But I think I suspected it earlier than you did.
The situation doesn't occur to you while you're watching
not
it.
Naturally.
You know, like, you don't think. And what the thing is, you never suspect him. Like, he's just so, you're like, well, it's like her husband, you know, like the lead investigator's husband, you know. What connection did he have to the kid? Like, you never suspect him. And there's even a scene where, like every single scene, he's taking care of the kids while she's out working. He's with the baby. He's taking the son to school. Like, he's being this great dad to these two kids. And then there's even a scene where she kind of, like, yells at him and is like, you never, like, finish anything. You need, like, you haven't painted the bedroom. And I was so mad at her. I was like, she needs to calm down and stop yelling at him because he's doing such a good job. And I even, like, was defending him against her.
Yeah.
And then you find out that it was him.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I read too many mystery novels, but I think I figured it out a little bit earlier than that. Just the way they were presenting other people as too much false positives and really, like, burying the lead with him. Like, he had nothing bad about him, and that's suspicious to me.
Mm.
We're like in a big moment in this town, like, he isn't breaking down the way everyone else is, which felt
it's
like he was hiding something.
Yeah.
But I mean, we're talking around all these people, we gotta talk about them. So, like, do you want to go down the cast of characters? Let's start from the top. Let's go with the people who are investigating this murder. We've mentioned them a little bit.
Okay, so there's D.I. Alec Hardy.
Played by David Tennant.
Played by David Tennant. He is an out-of-town investigator.
Yeah.
I think it's deputy investigator. I forget what it stands
for.
Yeah,
but he came in from out-of-town for and basically got a promotion that our other lead, D.S. Ellie Miller, played by the incomparable Olivia Colman.
Mm-hmm. She's so good in it.
She was supposed to get this job, and he comes in from out of town and takes it from her. I mean, not really. They give it to him.
Yeah.
He doesn't, like, physically steal it from her, but they give it to him, and then basically they get off to a rough start, and then they find out about this kid.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the show is them coming together as partners and really growing to trust each other and build this relationship, and then at the end it's crushing to him that he's finally, like, connecting with a coworker.
Yeah.
and it's this situation.
They do really set it up well where she comes in and is immediately mad at him.
Yeah.
Because he took her job, as she's calling it. And, yeah, so it kind of puts them on the wrong foot, and she's like, all right, well, let's make the best of it. And then she tries to be, like, casual with him, and he's like, don't.
Yeah.
So,
he's
yeah.
all work.
And then you, like, throughout the series, he's got his own mystery, where there's, yeah. like, this town, this other town, where he was trying to solve a child murder, and it didn't work out, and they couldn't get a conviction, so you're like, what happened there? So,
but yeah, they're building it up so like, oh, mysteries. Like, maybe he's bad, maybe he's worse off than you think, and he did just come to town before this guy yeah. died.
Also, I just want to point out that this show, when it aired, it had one Doctor Who in it.
Yeah.
Sorry, one Doctor from mm-hmm. Doctor Who. Now it has two Doctors.
Wrong. Now well, it has three Doctors.
Because William Bradley
played the
David,
first Doctor.
Sorry, David Bradley.
David Bradley played the first Doctor.
So
that counts.
I don't count him as one, because he isn't like...
He played the Doctor. He is the Doctor.
Yeah,
in
but
my
he
mind.
Wasn't... one of the Doctors. Like, if you were to list all of the Doctors...
Did you watch that Christmas special, though?
I did. He was amazing.
He was good enough.
I would
he
just
should
call
be considered
him
the Doctor.
A half a Doctor.
I will never do that
he had
to...
one episode.
I think he is a legend in British culture, and I don't think he gets enough credit. He's deserved to be called the Doctor.
I do love
mind.
David Bradley.
Love him.
Yeah, he's
if we're
going to
call William Hurt the Doctor, we can call David Bradley the Doctor.
Okay. All right, yeah. So there are three Doctors.
There are three Doctors
from Doctor
this.
Who in this.
Yeah,
there are a couple of companions, I think.
Oh
right?
yeah, there's well, are there
Arthur Darvill who plays the Reverend?
Yeah, he's a companion.
Is Rory from Doctor Who?
Olivia Colman's not a companion, but she's in a really good episode.
She was in Matt Smith's first episode,
And that's one that Chris Chibnall, the writer of this, wrote.
Mm.
So like, there, I think there's a lot of people here from Torchwood and. Yeah. And Doctor Who, and then there's a lot of...
Couple Game of Thrones,
a lot of Harry Potter people.
Mm.
But getting back to whoever else is here, I mean, we mentioned David Bradley, and he plays, who Danny mentioned before...
Jack Marshall,
and he's this... he's a shop owner, and he has these kids delivering papers.
Yeah.
They have paper routes from him.
I think his story is, to me, of all the stories that come to light, I think his is the saddest.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for him.
And that's one of the interesting things about this show. Like, there's some people who, in the wake of this, they grow stronger and get closer with their community and really band together. And there's some people that can't handle the pressure.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, like, he really couldn't. And it sucks. But it's so heartbreakingly fascinating to watch.
So one thing that is so sad to me in the first episode is... the body basically gets found, and then the police start to, like, cordon off the beach, and then they close the beach, and this is around the time that the victim, Danny Latimer,
mm-hmm.
his mother, Beth Latimer, who's played by, what's her face?
Jodie Whittaker,
yeah.
Yeah, the current Doctor
Who. She's the new Doctor. She is starting to notice that he's missing. She didn't know because he always wakes up early for his paper route and
yeah.
then goes to school.
Goes to school without them.
She goes to school to take his lunch and then is informed by the school that he never showed up. So
because it's like a big soccer day. They're having
yeah.
her football.
She's kind of freaking out. And it's so sad but kind of amazing when she's like in this line of cars trying to get to the beach. And everyone stopped. They're getting out of their cars. And she's like, what happened? And someone says, oh, they've closed the beach. They found a body.
She knows immediately. It's that mother's intuition.
And she just,
and they
like,
do a great scene running through the cars.
The,
like,
yeah,
always
the
a good scene in slow motion.
And it's so, I'm going to cry thinking about
it. All right, so let's talk about her husband is Mark Latimer. And he is one that, from the beginning, they want you to think it's him. Like, in the very first episode, see, they do the same thing that they do with the eventual killer.
Mm-hmm.
In the first episode, it starts off with Mark just being the best guy in the world. Mm-hmm. Everyone in this town
he's a good
loves
dad.
Him. He's a good dad.
He's walking down the street
which
saying hi to everyone.
Which is why you should suspect him. Suspect the good ones. but, yeah, they really go out of their way to show that he's a really good guy and is trying his best.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, over the course of the series, you see he's not perfect. He's
yeah.
got some major demons, but...
That's one of the saddest secrets that comes to light, is that...
That he hit his son.
His alibi is really weird, and they can't really nail it down, and they're like, we know you were out, we know you were at this place, like, what were mm-hmm. you doing out? And finally, he doesn't even confess that he was out because he was having an affair
yeah.
with the lady that runs the hotel. She confesses because he's been like arrested basically and is being interrogated and held on suspicion for death of his son. And he's willing
to go down for that.
I don't know if he would, maybe. Well, he wouldn't. But like, he sure as hell wasn't getting himself out of there by admitting to that. And she's the one that admitted it. But yeah, that one's really sad too. Because then the mom of the victim, not only did she just lose her son, she's also pregnant. And she just learned that her husband was cheating on her. It's kind of one of those, like, this show could be so soap opera-y and over-the-top drama if the writing wasn't so good and if the actors weren't so good.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, I mean, on top of all that, the mom also finds out her daughter, Chloe, is dating a man who is of age and she is underage. Mm-hmm. And that's also a big deal for her to learn that bombshell.
Yeah.
And he's played by the actor who plays Grey Worm from Game of Thrones, which is also interesting.
Jacob Anderson.
Yeah, it's interesting to see him again, and after, like, something that we watched was very brutal, and to see him in this, and he's just, like, this cute boyfriend.
I do love, though, that our cats just knocked something over. I do love when they find out, like, the dad finds out she's dating this guy. He finds out, like, he's a little bit older than her. They're freaking out. And then they can't find her. And they're like, she's with her boyfriend. And they, like, go track down, like, where the kid lives. And her parents drive out there. And you see them go in this place. Like, they're about to barge in on them, like, having sex or something. And the girl's just sitting there listening to music with headphones on and dancing. And he's just playing video games.
Yeah.
And you find out that, like, he built her what they call a happy room, which is somewhere where she can just, you know, like, be free and dance and listen to music. Like, she's dealing with the death of her brother right now.
Yeah.
And all of this drama around her family. And, like, I just thought that was so cute. Like, how do you as parents be like, oh, we don't approve of this relationship?
Yeah, in that moment, I think those parents should be like, okay, this guy may not fully understand what this is like for us, but he at least understands in a way.
Well, you can tell he cares about their daughter. He's not just, like, trying to have sex with her. Like,
he cares about her mental health, which is something not enough people in this town think about, their mental health. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, it's a small town.
Yeah.
Like, it's a small fictional town on the top of these beautiful cliffs, but that... I can't even imagine what, if you found a body at the bottom of them and in a tiny town, what you would think.
Yeah.
Some of the other characters, I'll just kind of rattle through them because we're taking a while to get through these characters. We have Susan Wright, who, she has a good boy.
She's the lady walking the dog all around town. She's kind of a loner. She kind of threatens people a bit. She's really rough and tough. But she's kind of a badass.
Yeah, and then there's Becca Fisher.
Yeah, she's the really beautiful Australian lady that owns the hotel, and everyone's in love with her.
Then, I mean, we've talked about Joe Miller, who is the eventual killer, and the husband of D.S. Ellie Miller, and they have a son named Tom. And the whole time, you're like, something's going on with Tom. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's, his story is also heartbreaking. Not just because he's lost a friend, but it seems like he's accepted the loss of his friend a long time ago, and that's even harder.
Yeah.
And then there are a couple people that I love in this. Danny made a big crib sheet for us so that we could find out who they are.
I'll post
and
a picture of this. And she has
one person that just says, creepy electrician.
Well, like...
he doesn't get a name.
All these characters have really memorable names, and, like, they have these interesting stories.
Like Nigel.
And then there's the creepy electrician who, like, approaches them one day and is like, I'm getting messages from the dead, and I have a message from Danny, and immediately the police are like, they just roll their eyes, and they're like, get out of here, you're a crackpot. You're just trying to, like, get fame from, this case. So the weird thing is that he's never disproven.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird. The whole show, every time the creepy electrician psychic guy is like, I'm getting messages from Danny, he says this. Like...
it's a good red herring.
Yeah, you're like, what is this? But by the end of the season, they never disprove him.
I mean,
so I'm kind of wondering...
do you need to disprove a psychic?
But that's the thing. In real life, yes. In this show...
I don't think you ever do. Like, because I don't think it's something to be taken seriously. It's like that octopus that predicted who was going to win the World Cup. It's like, yeah, you were right. Okay.
I'm just saying.
I don't think you can take what he does and how he considers that he gets this information as fact. He has the information. Great.
I just couldn't tell if on the show they were writing him as if maybe he's right, maybe he is psychic. Mm-hmm. Because they have that weird shot at the end when they're all lighting those fires all around the town to, like, in memorial of Danny, and, like, the mom looks over and, like, sees Danny, like, standing there smiling at her, and it was weird.
Well, I mean, the show is, like, he has said it's very inspired by Twin Peaks, which does feel kind of spooky.
I don't feel that at all. And I'm a big fan of Twin Peaks.
Interesting. He was like that. He was watching.
Okay, it, you know
especially
what?
Especially in the beginning.
It is. Yeah. Because it starts off with a mom kind of getting ready in the morning and then realizing her kid's gone and then
slow, melodic,
freaking
building
out,
music.
And then it affects them. They find the kid and then it affects the whole town. So
and it's not really about the murderer as it is about the whole town.
Yeah. I mean, kind of see it.
It's a British version of it. It was inspired by that. And he used to write for Law and Order UK. And he said when he was writing them, he really wanted to write a murder mystery, but not a typical one.
Yeah.
And then I think he liked the slow, mysterious nature of Twin Peaks.
We should probably talk about the journalists.
Oh, yeah. That's the plot line that I like the least.
I like the journalists because part of the drama of this show is all of the secrets and backgrounds and stuff that are getting dredged up while they're having to basically look at everybody with this, like, you know, like, severe scrutiny, trying to figure out what's going on. The journalists, I think, are very important to the show in that they're the ones finding a lot of this information.
Yeah.
They're pulling it up. I get why it's not as, their storyline, I guess, isn't as exciting or interesting.
Well, I also, like, a lot of the show and a lot of these characters, it's a question of morality.
Yeah.
What do we accept as a society and what do we not?
Yeah.
What is crossing the line?
Yeah.
Outside of violence, what do people do that we don't accept?
Yeah.
And with the journalists, like, from the beginning, they're trying to tell you, like, look, these city journalists are much different than these small town journalists. We do things a different way. And just to me, I'm like, I don't care about the morality of journalism
because
that's literally their job is to report the news.
It's true. However, I like showing the difference between the big city journalist and the little town, you know, newspaper column guy because in the big city, you can just, like, go after the story, get the scoop, put it out there for Ollie's aunt is Ellie Miller. So, like, when Ollie gets out there and is putting information out there about suspects and about people involved in the case, these are people he lives in the same town with, and it's people that he knows. So it's kind of like the ethics are a little bit different when you are closely connected to them.
But also from the beginning, he mentions how, like, he's trying to get out. He's been applying to papers all over the country, and this is his way out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, go for it, dude.
Yeah.
Like, there is a weird gray line there.
But that's the thing.
Also did study a lot of journalism in college and almost was a journalist.
But here's my question. Is dredging up painful information about a suspect bad if it helps further an investigation? I say no.
Yeah.
However, some of the stuff that the journalist did hurt the family that is grieving for the victim.
True.
And I think that is the line that you don't cross. So.
I guess, but then why solve the murder? If it's going to hurt them to know the information.
I'm not talking about...
No, I know, but I think anything... After something like this happens, after an event like this happens, nothing will ever make them right. Nothing will fill this hole, fix them. And I think information is power, and knowledge of something, to me personally, knowledge is more important than protecting somebody's feelings. Because they're going to find out this information eventually, and then they'll be mad that it was hidden from them.
I see what's happening here.
What?
I'm the small-town journalist, and you're the big
city I'm the city slicker. We got to get those clicks.
I also like the lady that runs the newspaper. She's
great.
She's really good. I also like the moment when Ollie, who is the young journalist, Ollie publishes information, or he tweets information that he shouldn't have. He should have waited. They should have informed the family. I like when he put it out there. Maggie, the lady who runs the newspaper, makes him go apologize to someone. Yeah. I forget if he was apologizing.
He apologized to the detective.
Yeah.
David Tennant.
Yeah. And I really, really liked that. It was like, she was doing what a good parent should do, which is, like, the person that you were responsible for and training, like, you make them apologize for their shit.
Yeah.
And I really, really liked Maggie because of that.
Yeah, it is funny that because of that, the Big Town News, like, came in and got involved. So, like, he was literally doing the thing that would get him a job.
It's true.
And he was getting chastised from the woman who said she wanted him to get those kind of jobs.
Yeah.
It's understanding, and, I mean, the show is all about this kind of a thing.
Yeah.
What you do changes the people around you. Who you are affects everyone.
Yeah.
What you show them of yourself, and if you choose to show them your entire self, that can change how they view you.
Hmm.
Every single decision anybody makes affects their entire town, is what this show is kind of portraying.
Yeah. What else? One thing that I think is really interesting that they do really well in the show is, and it's a little bit cheesy and falls into kind of like soap opera drama, but I don't care, is like they'll focus in on the new suspect, the one the audience is supposed to go, it's gotta be them. She has
time.
The victim's skateboard, or like, this guy has a crossbow. It was definitely
him. They saw a tall, bald man.
Yeah. Like, they always focus in on this new person, and they make them look so suspicious.
Yeah.
And it's so cheesy, but like, I love it so much. It's really well done. And they also do a really good thing of like, episodes end with you like, getting an information that you're like, oh, someone else is a suspect.
That's the best kind of mystery.
It keeps you wanting to watch the next episode right away.
Yeah. Like, you don't have to end on a cliffhanger where something big happens and we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good to just be like, there's new information now.
Yeah.
Are you interested, audience? And then end with that. Like, that's a good cliffhanger in my mind.
So, there's also a couple of characters that they're not listed. They're not shown on this chart. I'll post a picture of this chart on our Instagram. Because I worked really hard on this chart.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's fascinating.
There are some characters not on here, but I listed them. There's Chloe's boyfriend. We did talk about him.
Yeah.
There's the Latimer grandmother, who's very good. And then
also from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, who is she on Game of Thrones?
She's the Septa. Like, the famous Septa that walks behind her and says, "Shame."
Are you sure?
I am positive. She's Septa
Mordain.
It
looks like a different lady.
It looks like a different lady, but she's Septa Mordain.
Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah.
There's also Soko Brian. They keep calling him Soko Brian. And they're always talking about Soko. And, like, I watch so many American crime procedurals that when we're watching the British one, I'm like, yeah, what does DI stand for? What does DS stand for? I don't know. I actually looked them up
They're American terms, too. We just don't use them, usually.
True. But, so Soko, do you know what Soko means?
Southern Comfort.
No! I had to look it up because they kept calling him Soko, and there was like, Brian asks Ellie out on a date, and they're like, that's weird, and she's like, yeah, I'm married, and then he was like, is it flattering? And she's like, kind of, but Soko, you know, they've been touching weird things at crime scenes and stuff. So, anyway, I looked it up, and it's,
something coroner.
It's scenes of crime officer.
Oh.
So basically CSI.
Yeah.
But I thought that was really interesting. They call it Soko, and I love that there's a character, they just call him Soko Brian.
And I like that the normal cops are like, no, those CSI techs are weird.
They touch bodies
and blood, I'm good.
It's funny.
I just want my 99.
Yeah. Are there any other secrets that came to life that you think are really interesting?
I mean, there's a lot of them. I think the show does a good job with it. I think the Reverend, I really like his whole storyline.
I was going to say, you learned that the town Reverend, played by Arthur Darvill, is an alcoholic. Yeah. And he goes to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he's been sober for, I think, like, over a year.
Yeah.
Maybe 2 years.
He really blossoms over the course of this. Like, he really figures out...
He's a good
out.
Character.
And I think for the first time in his life, he probably is like, oh, these people need God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think before, and especially in a small town, you're not getting all these people in church that he wants. And he sees them all the time. And now they're all coming to him like,
we need help.
Needing questions answered.
Yeah, they're all hurt. One thing I really like about his character as a, leader of a church character, is that he is always supporting the people in the town. Every little problem they have, he's actively trying to protect Jack Marshall. When people start to go after him about the accusations when he was younger, like, he's there trying to, like, tell the police to, like, protect him, like, keep the media away from him. Like, he's trying so hard to protect and support the people in the town. And he is doing it with, like, you know, God's here for you. You know, it's, we're here for you, but, like, also doing it in a way of just being a good person.
Yeah.
So I really, really like his character.
Me too.
There's also one of the stories, we were talking about this the other day, Susan Wright's story. You finally figure out Susan Wright's story, and it is that she had a husband and two kids, and then she found out the husband was molesting the kids, and one of the kids died, and then he implicated her, saying she knew. So I think she went to jail, and she lost custody of the baby that she had. And her baby ends up being Nige, who is, he works doing, like, handyman work with the victim's dad. Gotcha. So, but yeah, Susan Wright's story is so sad in that there was this thing happening under her roof, and she had no idea. And then when she is acquitted of all suspicion, Ellie's letting her go, and Susan says to her, why are you looking at me like that? And Ellie says, under your own roof, how could you not know? Mm-hmm. And you're like, yeah, like, how could you not know?
And then at the end, Beth says, like, the same thing to her.
To Ellie. Yeah. Like, how did you not know something was wrong? It punches you so hard.
Also, I just looked it up real quick, and while she is the character Septa Mordain, I was wrong. She's not in
The King's grandmother?
Landing. She's the Septa for Winterfell.
Okay.
So she's up there for the first few seasons.
I was
going
to say, I knew she wasn't the shame lady.
Yeah, no, she's different.
Oh, another fun fact. I don't even know how to get in. I don't even know how to start this. We talked about this, too. Chloe's boyfriend, played by Jacob Anderson, his character name is Dean Thomas.
Oh, yeah.
Which you and I recognize as a character from Harry Potter. Yep. Dean Thomas is a character from Harry Potter.
That dates Ginny Weasley for a little bit. He's a Gryffindor.
And the weirdest thing is, the kid who played Dean Thomas in Harry Potter is in this show.
He's in this,
in the beginning. It's so weird.
Yeah, don't include Dean Thomas if you're going to have a character named Dean Thomas, especially if it's all
and
fictional.
And he's not playing Dean Thomas.
Make it a different name. Make it Thomas Dean or something.
I almost wish that they had just had him play Dean Thomas. Oh. And then we would have been like, ooh, when he graduated Hogwarts, he went and lived in Broadchurch.
Yeah, that would be odd. I'm glad they didn't.
Sheldon.
Yes, Danny.
I think it's time for a snack break.
Oh, I think it's time. They've discovered a snack on the beach.
Let's go!
So today, we have an interesting snack that I feel like you might like more than me.
What is it?
It's called a bounty. And I say that you might like it more than me because there are coconuts all over the front of this thing.
Yeah, so this is kind of, I've held onto this bar for a little while. It's not old, assure you.
It's like 10, 20 years old.
When I see people listing their favorite British candy, usually Americans, when I see people talking about British candy, people talk about Bounty Bar a lot.
Interesting.
And anytime I go to a store and I browse the British candy, there's always Bounty. Bounty is always there.
And you've never tried it before.
I have.
Okay, that explains
it. It's been a while. I'm a big coconut fan.
Yeah, and I'm not, but mainly it's the texture of coconut that I don't like, and I think it's the fake texture that they add into it. Like, coconut flavoring, I'm okay with.
What fake texture is there in
coconut? The, like, shaved coconut texture?
That's shaved coconut.
I don't like that. So hopefully this isn't that.
They just shred it. I mean, I think that's what it is, babe.
Okay.
Have you ever had a Mounds bar or an Almond Joy?
Both of them are, like, very low on my list.
That's
of things
what this
I like.
Is.
Okay.
So
this will be fun.
Do you want to try it?
Yeah.
All right. Give it a little try.
I like that it's like a small little oval with some, like, waves on top. Arty design of chocolate.
I
is
do
cool.
like.
Oh my god! Underneath though.
What?
It's like printed. It's got Bounty everywhere,
Let
and
me
then
see.
There's a palm tree.
That's really cute.
That's so cute. I don't want to eat it now.
Wow. Yeah, normally candy bars just have like...
They're like, yeah, don't look under
like
here.
Like a weird tread pattern or a weird crisscross pattern. And this actually says Bounty and there's palm trees on it. That's cute.
Or it's like there's caramel leaking out the bottom or something. You don't want to look at it.
Nougat.
This is really neat.
Give it a try. Well, you're giving that a try. Fun fact, I'm pretty sure in The Vicar of Dibley, when she gets married, and it might be in the dream sequence where she's getting married, but Alice has, like, crunchy bar, like, she's wearing a tiara made of crunchy bars. I'm pretty sure she's got, like, little bounty bars in her hair.
Oh, nice.
But, yeah, so you gave it a try. What do you think? I'm gonna give it a try.
It's what I thought it would be. I mean, I don't hate it. It's just a lot of coconut in my mouth, and, like, it's not a flavor I like.
Mm.
Like, I'm very big on textures, and this one is just, like, there are too many little things scratching at my tongue. The chocolate is good. It's smooth. I do like it better than Almond Joy and Mounds. Like, it is much better than them.
It is so much better than an Almond Joy or a Mounds.
Oh, yeah.
The chocolate is so good.
It elevates it. This is a very good chocolate.
Who makes Bounty?
The Bounty Man.
The Bounty Man?
Yeah. Dog.
Okay, this is really loud package. I don't see a...
It must be a mystery. Maybe there's just, like, some guy that makes all of them.
I think,
like,
God brings them to us.
I was thinking it's more like just some guy in a house, and he's just, like, constantly, like, making them and just throwing them onto the street, and people are grabbing them and selling them.
Maybe.
But what do you think? Like,
so I am a big fan of shredded coconut, or as I think they say in England, desiccated coconut.
Ooh.
That's what they call shredded coconut.
Man, I'm glad we say shredded. That sounds bad. Desiccated. Like, yeah, it sounds like you murdered that coconut.
I am a big fan of shredded coconut. I love coconut everything. I agree that the texture of coconut is not as good as the flavor, but I'm a fan.
Yeah.
And I will eat anything that has, like, coconut like this inside. It's sweet. I think if you like coconut, you would love this candy bar.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it tastes like coconut. I'll give it that. Danny has closed her eyes and is just eating this so happy right now.
I took another bite. The chocolate is exquisite.
Yeah, it's very good chocolate.
Mm.
So is there, like, a nut or anything in here?
Nope.
Or okay.
Nope.
Those, like, folds of chocolate are just, like, a little excess chocolate. Okay, cool.
I think that's a good bar for coconut people. Like the coconut people in from Mighty the Mighty Boosh. Yep.
I immediately thought of that and thought of them, like, eating it.
Isolation.
Isolation.
So I think this is our 24th episode.
Oh, this
right?
one's number 24?
This is 24, I believe. Wow. Our 25th one, I think we're just going to do a snack spectacular.
Yeah, special episode.
Yeah, and I think we're just going to kind of rank all of the candy that we've tried on this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, and all 25.
Yeah, I think we kind of go through it casually, and maybe this is the perfect time to drop in that 25th candy bar that we ate and haven't put in an episode.
Ooh, we talked about it before. You're right. We did a recording.
And then, like, yeah, maybe each of us will have our top five, where, like, these are the five ones that I
like
know
what
the
my
most.
Number one is.
Is it this?
We'll talk about it.
Okay. Oh, it's Boost, isn't it?
All right. Let's get back to our episode. And we're back. Yeah, is there any other things that you want to talk about from Broadchurch?
Yes.
What?
I mean, there's a lot I want to talk about
Tell
from
me.
This show. I mean, other than them, like, not knowing who the killer was, that's, like, such a fun thing this whole set, the whole crew was very close. Like, all of them worked together, and because a lot of them are in scenes with multiple other people in the show, like,
yeah.
it's kind of rare to have so many people in an ensemble cast
yeah.
be in scenes with so many other people.
Mm.
And I really...
Oh, you burped.
Excuse me, so gross. I really appreciate that in this show, that it gives a chance to let characters interact. Where usually you would just see this through the eyes of the detectives, and you do see a lot of it through their eyes. Like,
it's
primarily their investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But you do get scenes of characters interacting that adds to the mystery and humanizes them.
Yeah.
Where you get to see somebody not being interrogated by a police officer
mm-hmm.
and still dealing with these problems.
Yep.
And I really love that in this show, that they let a scene breathe and they give weight to every single person's problem.
Yeah.
Even if their problem isn't that they just lost a child, they're going through something, and we get to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I don't know. It's almost like some of the saddest stuff is my favorite stuff.
Yeah.
Just because, like, the drama is so amazing. But, yeah, I think... I just feel so... it's almost hard for me to watch Jack Marshall's story. Because yeah, he has this whole, like... Tough. People start bringing up that, like, there were charges from his past. He, like, served in prison for a year for, like, sex with a minor is what they mm-hmm. keep saying it. And you're like, well, that's suspicious. Because this kid was killed. Yeah, because
this kid was a minor.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so you're like, what's the story there? And you keep thinking of him as this predator. And then you find out that he was a music teacher and he fell in love with his pupil mm-hmm. who was just, I think she was like, I want to say she was like 6 months or so from being of legal age.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, to Americans, legal age is 18,
true.
Where you feel like more of an adult. In England, it's 16, and that's hard for Americans to accept.
That is weird.
Yeah.
That is weird.
If it's a grown man and a 16-year-old, it's still not, and it's another one of those morally gray things.
Yeah.
It's that thing, as an American, our morals are different,
yeah.
so we draw the line in a different place than they do.
I agree with you that it is still weird, because he was, I think he was like a grown man, and yeah. she was about to be 16, but she wasn't, and so when they got found out, even though they had fallen in love, he went to jail for a year, and then mm-hmm. when he got out, they, like, once she was of age and everything, they, you know, they kept having a relationship, and they eventually got married.
Yeah.
And then when she was older, they had a son, and it just kind of sounds like, hey, that was a really rough start for you, but then you had this nice marriage.
Yeah.
And I forget what happened to the son and her. I think they both died.
I believe so. I don't fully remember, but I think it's something
like son,
that.
I think, died in a car crash, and then the girl either, like, left him or killed herself. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But basically, it's just the saddest story. And they were always like, well, why are you always hugging the boys in the Sea Brigade? And he was like, it's not because I am inappropriate with them. It's because I miss my son.
Yeah.
And you're just
like and he says something that I think is very true and telling, especially of a man who grew up in his age in England, where
yeah.
everyone is afraid of pedophiles. But also, men tend to get looked down upon for touching other men, other people, like... It's if, you know, like if a man hugs a child,
mm-hmm.
it's immediately seen as predatory.
It can be.
I mean, at least in this culture, the way that they've approached him, they see him hugging children. They're like, that's a predatory
yeah.
behavior. And he says, like, you know, like, why is it wrong for, like, a man to just need comfort, like a touch?
Yeah.
And it's that, I think, their first peek into the mind of our killer, where it's like he's plagued by a very similar thing. His is different.
Yeah.
His is
predatory.
It's predatory and a little sexual in nature. Like
yeah.
it doesn't get there, but they point out like that doesn't mean it wouldn't have gotten there.
It's true.
Like it very well may have gotten into a dark area.
Yeah.
But it does show us that like a lot of men in this culture don't get the, like, emotional release that they want, this connection with somebody.
Yeah.
And some of them seek it in a place that they shouldn't.
Yeah.
I
just think that Jack Marshall's story is one of the saddest ones on here. But also, David Bradley is so good on this.
Yeah. He's very good.
Ugh. He's apparently the nicest guy.
Which I believe. That's why he's in everything.
Yeah.
He's like...
He's great in Harry Potter.
It takes a special man to play a role where you are the only non-magical person in a movie in school full of magical people, and you're constantly shit on, and you have a cat that's killed by a monster and nobody cares, and he keeps doing that role, and he sweeps up the rubble even after, like, these magical people could fix this castle on
he's
their own.
Great.
He's the MVP of Hogwarts. He's so great.
Yeah, it is painful, but I do really like his story.
A couple of other interesting things that I really like. One thing I love about the show is their use of cell phones.
Mm.
I mean, from the beginning, Jodie Whittaker does a great thing where, like, she taps the phone on her mouth a lot when she's, like, thinking or trying to figure out where her son is. Like, she opens her mouth and is, like, tapping her phone inside her mouth, which is a weird detail, but immediately you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's, like... It's a believable thing.
Yeah.
And
she's, like, fidgeting, but she's not putting that phone down.
Exactly. It's staying right next to her in case they call, in case she gets a text, she can see it immediately.
Yeah.
And then another very interesting phone thing that I learned, the phone that David Tennant uses in this
mm-hmm.
is actually his phone. He insisted on using it. Don't know why, but he really wanted to use that phone.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, the phone that he uses, that he's always, like, calling on, it's his phone. I think maybe he feels comfortable, he can, like, rehearse with it.
You're gonna look natural on screen if it's something that you're very comfortable with.
Yeah.
So I get that. It's not as weird as I thought.
And this is, like, none of them have iPhones. It's an era, really, like, kind of before that was everywhere, everyone had one. And so not everyone has, like, smartphone-type things. People still have flip phones and sliders. So I think it does give people personality, too, and what type of phone they have.
Yeah.
Speaking of, like, personality of places and things, I love, again, the setting of this. These coasts are beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
It's the Jurassic Coast in Dorset.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah. I mean, and the town in this episode is fictional. It's made up for this show.
Yeah.
But it's heavily inspired by this place that Chris Chibnall, like, he kind of grew up near.
Ooh, and so whenever what he place?
Was, I mean, it was just in Dorset. Like, he grew up not far from these cliffs.
In a beach town.
Yeah. And so he could basically, one of the reasons why he set it here is so that he could film it near his family.
Interesting.
Which is interesting.
It is cool. It is one of those things where, like, the story is so dark and heavy and ugly, but the setting is gorgeous, which really helps to, like, not only make really iconic setting, but but also, like, you get to see all this ugly stuff, but you at least get to see a nice view.
And so, how, like, this small town, they immediately show you how relaxed and not worried they are, where David Tennant points out there are no fences or gates along the cliffs.
You can walk right along the cliff.
And Olivia Colman's like, well, I mean, people know not to do that.
Yeah.
But it's such a small town, big town mentality of the big town people are like, but somebody will do that. And small town's like, no, we teach them better than that here.
I also do like that it's not just, like, they didn't just choose to set it in this, like, beach town with all these cliffs. They used it. You know, they use the cliffs. They use boats. They really, like, it plays out as it would if it really happened there. Yeah. So it's very interesting.
It is.
So there is one question I have.
Ooh.
I think the writing in it is very solid.
Yeah.
But there is kind of one of those, I don't want to say it's a plot hole, but it's something that doesn't, that I just was like, why didn't this happen? I feel like in real life it would. And it is the fact that the mother, Beth Latimer, she is talking to the police, she's talking to family members, she's trying to, like, work through this, like, death of her son and the fact that the murder hasn't been solved. And she talks to her best friend, who is, like, the investigator on it, Ellie, and she says, I need to talk to somebody that knows, somebody who's been through this. Yeah. Like, what happened to the mother of that murdered child in Sandbrook? Like, I need to get in contact with her. And so all you see is her meeting up with this woman whose daughter was also murdered. And they have a discussion. So you're like, okay, I assume Ellie put them in contact with each other. They're meeting up at this little roadside restaurant, kind of talking about the cases. And this is where the lady, the mother of this, the girl who died in Sandbrook, starts telling Beth, oh, Alec Hardy, he's on your case? That's terrible. He's awful. He screwed up the investigation. He lost evidence. He is the reason my daughter's killer was never brought to justice. And then Beth is like, oh my gosh, you're so right. And she's like, this is awful. And then she starts to distrust him. Yeah. My problem, and it's not a problem because the show is great, but my question is, why wouldn't Beth go to Ellie, who's on the investigation, and say, I have concerns about this investigation?
Well, because
or do you think she was already starting to distrust Ellie?
I mean, probably a little bit of that, but then what's Ellie gonna do?
I don't know. I just feel like if I saw something that really concerned me about the investigation of my child's murder, and I was very close with somebody on the case, I would talk to them about it.
Interesting. I mean, I can see that. I guess in my mind, it is a distrust of the police, but also knowing that, like, if Ellie doesn't know, she can't do anything. If Ellie does know, then she's still acting with this guy that may have messed up a case. Like, I get where you're coming from. I think that is something, I think that's something a lot of people would do. I think you can do a little hand wavium and say that people under grief do strange things.
Yeah.
That, like,
It just seems like it was put there for a reason and then nothing ever really came out.
Well, it's put there to make you as an audience member doubt him and suspect him for a second. That's the only reason why that character exists, why there was another person like that. It's to give that plot point of us being like, we shouldn't like this main guy. Maybe he did it. It's just another red herring. Like, they do a very good job, like, pulling us different directions all throughout this series, like, making us distrust everyone, including the people that we see as protagonists.
Yeah. Well, that was like the only thing, literally the only thing in the writing that that I like kind of questioned. But otherwise, it's all so good.
Yeah, I only question the direction they take in the second season on. I hear the third season gets good again, but I just
have
don't like...
another question.
Yeah, what's your second question?
There's something that they talk about in this show that I think I've heard referred to on another show, British crime show.
What's that?
And it makes me wonder, is this something that's very common practice in British crime investigation? Because it's not something we do here. And if it is, I don't know about it.
What is it?
It is the recreation. Do you remember that?
Vaguely. I don't...
So they have CCTV footage, which is something that we don't really have here.
Yeah, we don't.
Like, I remember the first time somebody told me, like, if you walk around in London, there's literally no path you could take through London where you wouldn't be on camera.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. And I remember people presenting it as, like, a very scary thing. But when it comes to crime, you have footage of everything, which is good.
I mean, it's both. I mean, at this point...
Good and bad?
At this point where we are as a society, we get freaked out by things like that, but then we don't care that every one of us has a phone with recording devices and two, like, a front and a back facing camera, a GPS. Yeah. Like, we actively buy things that give up our identity. We are constantly being monitored. You would be dumb if you don't think that we're being filmed and recorded by our own phones constantly and our computers.
So one thing that they do have on the case is they have CCTV footage of Danny riding his skateboard down the middle of the street in the middle of the night.
By himself.
By himself. No one there. It's the middle of the night. Nobody's out.
Yeah.
So nobody saw him that they know of. And so they do what they keep calling a recreation, a crime recreation or a reconstruction, I think. Not recreation.
Yeah.
I think it's reconstruction.
Yeah.
And they basically get Tom, who is Danny's friend and the investigator's son, to skateboard down the street while they all walk behind him. And the reason is that they are trying to, like, show anyone in the town, like, if you see this, like, maybe it jogs your memory. Did you see this when it happened that night? It kind of raises awareness of the situation. But that is something I had never heard of.
Yeah, I don't... I mean, maybe it's common there. I don't think it's a common police tactic. I think it's a common mystery tactic.
Mm.
Like, it to me feels like...
You mean like in TV?
Like, no, it to me feels like a Sherlock Holmes thing.
Mm.
Like, Sherlock Holmes was all about being like, okay, this is the murderer. Now I want to, like, put myself in their shoes and see how this happened and visualize it, like... I think for some people solving a mystery, to be able to visualize it happening helps jog their memory, like you said, or something will click.
Mm.
Maybe there's something they're not looking at the right way. Yeah. I don't think...
I just don't know
I think
if
it's
that's
probably not a police
thing. A
thing
in Britain or not.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're in Britain and know, or if you've been done
research...
We can
also do some research.
Yeah. But yeah, let us know if that's a real thing, or if you're in America and that's a real thing and we don't know about it, please let us know, because we're dumb sometimes.
I think... Do we want to talk about the, just kind of the final episode a bit?
Yeah, touch on
because
it briefly.
Because I want to just briefly touch on this scene where the killer basically, like, reveals himself. He, like, turns on the GPS on Danny's phone. He's holding it.
Yeah, he just can't hide anymore,
and they,
he says.
And they track it, and it shows David Tennant, like, walking past all these houses. So you know, he knows where he's going. He's narrowing down who it is based on where he's going.
Well, for the audience, he's
narrowing it down. Absolutely. He knows.
He knew in, like, oh, it's so good. In the scene where he brings in Tom and his dad, like, the entire time, rewatch that scene. It's so good. Every question he has, he's watching the dad. It's all about the dad's reaction. He doesn't care that Tom's there.
Yeah.
I mean, he does. He cares for Tom as, like, his partner's son. But it is one of those things where he is talking to the killer and is 99% sure and just needs that 1%.
Yeah. So he knows. The audience doesn't know.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he finds him. And then they bring him in. And then David Tennant's character sits down with him and kind of talks, and he confesses to it and explains what their relationship was and all that, and it's really weird. And then the scene after that is him having to tell Ellie,
yeah,
basically, your husband murdered this boy.
Yeah.
And... I can't talk about it. I'm gonna cry.
But then, can you imagine what it's like for her as an actress to have to be able to figure out, like, oh, by the way, it was your husband this whole time. Now you have to portray that in this scene.
Yeah.
And he said that he was. They kind of like they were kept away from each other, so they didn't see each other until the scene where she comes in.
Yeah.
Like even the actors didn't see each other, and he was wearing all these pads on him because he knew she was going to get physical and beat him up. And he said she still, like, legitimately kicked him hard. And he's like, he had bruises for weeks and couldn't walk right because she wailed on yeah. him. And it felt real. Like, it felt like what somebody would do if their spouse was like that.
The scene when he basically tells her, like, it was your husband, like, she plays it so well.
Yeah.
She doesn't believe it at first. She's like, no. Mm-mm. And they're like, we have him in custody. And that's when she's like, it's somewhat real, but she's still like, that's wrong. It's not true.
Yeah.
And she plays it.
And because she was certain,
so
too, she's
well.
Talking to the person that she thinks is the killer.
Yeah.
Like, it's the person that matches every description. She plays it really well, though.
I'm trying not to cry right now, but.
But you're failing.
Olivia Colman is such a good actress.
There's a reason why she just won
she's
an Academy Award.
She's such a good actress. Like,
and this is, to all of you out there who have not seen The Favourite yet, watch it. Like.
Some people might not like it.
I don't care. Watch it anyway. Olivia Colman is so good
she's
in it.
So
the
good.
The way she eats that cake and then cries about it. Oh my god.
I'm so happy for her because, like, she yeah. did a lot of stuff. Like, I first saw her on Peep Show.
I first saw her on Hot Fuzz.
And she was funny in Peep Show. Yeah, and she's in Hot Fuzz. She was, like, doing comedy stuff.
Yeah. And she's great at that. And I
she
think, like,
is.
People who are very, I think some of the best serious actors come from comedy
mm-hmm.
because they know timing.
Yep.
They understand how to hit a beat, and she gets it.
I agree with that.
She gets the beats of the scene.
She's so good. And then she has to do the scene of going face to face with her husband and asking him, is it true? And he basically says yes. And then she, like, screams at him and hits him, and
yeah.
they have to drag her out of the room, and she's just screaming. And, like, I can't even imagine
and then
what that would be like to film. Having to just, like, lose
the
control.
The next one that, like, really hit me, too, is when Mark, the dad, has to see his
yeah.
one of his best friends in there that did this to his son.
Yeah.
And they're like, there's at this point, he can't touch them. They're separated by, like, a metal thick jail cell. And they're delivering this thing back and forth through a tiny, like, mail slot in the jail cell. And that's powerful. From a guy who, through, like, most of the series, you built up to be like, oh, I don't like this guy after all. Like,
yeah.
he's, like, cheating on his wife and stuff.
Yeah.
But then at the end of the day, you're like, but it's still his son.
Yeah.
Even if he's a shitty person. His son is still gone,
yeah.
and he didn't deserve this. His son didn't deserve this. His
and
best friend did it to him.
When he starts to confront his friend about it,
yeah.
and his friend immediately tries to turn it around on him. He was like,
yeah.
he only came and talked to me because you hit him once.
Yeah.
And, like, and it's just such
Shuts
a shitty, shitty thing. Like, he's such a selfish
victim
person.
Blaming.
Yeah. He's like, I, you know, like, we only had this relationship because of you. And it's, and, like, yeah, the dad just shuts it down immediately. Like, that you can't use me. You
yeah.
can't blame me for you killing my son.
Yeah.
It's so painful. But then, yeah,
so
then Olivia Colman has to do the scene of telling her son it was your dad that
yeah.
killed your friend. And
also
then
hard.
Olivia Colman also has to do the scene of trying to, like, reach out to her friend, the mom of the victim, and having the mom come up to her and say the same thing she said
yeah.
to Susan Wright, which is, how could you not know? And then she just turns around and goes back in her house, and you're like,
yeah.
that friendship
gone.
Is over.
Yeah.
It's
or is it? Watch season two. It's, that's a weird show.
I think my mom, Diane, I know
hey,
you're
Diane.
Listening. I'm pretty sure
favorite
my mom,
listener.
Like, she watched Broadchurch because she was texting me about it, and she loved it because it's amazing. And my mom loves murder stories. But my mom, I think she also tried watching
Grace Point.
And I think she did try watching season 2 and 3.
Oh,
and she was like, it's not good.
it's just a very different show. I think he has said before, like, he started working on this, like, in the early 2000s, had the idea, but just kept, like, bouncing it around.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until he got, like, pneumonia and then just was in a fever dream writing that, like, it really kicked off. But he's been thinking about it for so long.
Yeah.
And he always said it was, like, a three-act play. And the first act was this mystery. And I think he didn't understand what people liked about it and should have stopped thinking of it as a three-act play and thought of it as, oh, let's do another mystery. Because that's what people want. We want to see the killer.
It's very good. So here's a question for you.
Yeah.
How British is it?
Well, I just mentioned that there is a spinoff. Not a spinoff, a remake.
Recently learned there was an American...
You didn't know when it came out?
I had no idea.
It was a big deal when it came out.
I didn't know about it. I don't know why.
Do you know anything about
it? All I know is that they tried to do an American version with David Tennant reprising his role.
Yeah. Well, he plays... It's a different
name, similar role.
He wears sunglasses.
All I know is that... Oh, my God.
They wear sunglasses so much in that show. It's
All I know is that it was not well received and it got canceled after one season.
It's pretty well received.
Did you watch it?
I've read a lot of critic reviews for it, and it's overall positive, not glowing, but it's positive. I've seen the premiere. It's a shot-for-shot remake. It's in a small town in Oregon. Has a great cast.
Twin Peaks.
Basically.
Yeah.
But it is a small town in Oregon. Anna Gunn plays the Olivia Colman role, and she's good.
Interesting.
Anna Gunn is what she did right after Breaking Bad.
Okay. She's a pretty good actress.
She's just not Olivia Colman.
You're not Olivia Colman. Yeah. No one is Olivia Colman.
The whole time you're watching it, you're like, why do we get David Tennant but not Olivia Colman? Like, if I want one, give me both.
It's one of those things. I actually had this written down in my notes that, like, it's so good in many ways, but the thing for me that makes it so amazing is the chemistry between David Tennant and Olivia Colman.
Yeah.
Even though their characters start off so, like, toe-to-toe, and they're just, like, opposition.
Well, that's
the chemistry is so good.
That's what you do in any good buddy cop or buddy, like, best friend movie. Like, they have to start off hating each other for you to want them to love each other by the end.
True.
And I think... But it takes good actors to develop that chemistry to make it work.
And then when, like... He's basically telling the station, like, after she's found out and everyone's found out who it is.
She didn't know.
He's basically telling everyone in the station, there is absolutely no insinuation by anyone that she knew about this.
And that she needs you guys now more than ever.
He's protecting her.
But in the beginning, he wouldn't have done that. Like, man. Okay, one last thing about Grace Point before we move on. Okay. So, Grace Point. One of the reasons why I say it was well received.
Yeah.
This is something that is both funny and very aggravating. I don't want to get too in the weeds. I'll come back to it. David Tennant won the People's Choice Award for Best Actor in a New Series for Grace Point.
Really?
I don't think that should be allowed if you're playing the same character in, like, a shot-for-shot remake of something that was already critically acclaimed. Like, that is not a new actor in a new series. Like, you can be the best actor.
Oh, okay, so you don't disagree that he got an award.
Yeah.
You disagree that it was for new actor.
For a new series.
Okay.
Like, that's not a new series. Even if the show is technically new, you're playing
it's
the same
new for
role.
For America.
But it wasn't because the, like... Grace Point came out after BBC America was airing Broadchurch. So most Americans knew about Grace Point because Broadchurch aired and it was good. And then he still got this award. Like, good for him.
I mean, that's
how great
good David Tennant is.
He's phenomenal.
That's how much people like him.
They love him wearing sunglasses in Grace Point. People, please send us memes about it because it's the funniest thing. They never take them off. They're always wearing sunglasses. It's so sunny in Oregon,
it's
I guess.
America.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and
weird.
I think... Well, yeah, they just wanted that David Caruso.
There's so many things that we've covered a lot, but, like, there's so many things we didn't cover.
There's so much, and we can't. If, like, we just can't get to it.
Anybody has any, if there's anything that you think we should have mentioned or anything interesting from this season that we didn't mention, feel free to reach out to us.
Yeah, let us know, like, on our social media channels. We're the Anglophiles or the Anglophiles podcast on different mediums, and files with an F. Let us know your favorite plot line, your favorite characters in this, and let us know things that we were wrong about in this episode. Like, glad I corrected the SEPTA, because I'm sure one of you guys would have. But there are other things that I'm sure we missed, something that you really love that sticks out to you that you're like, this is why Broadchurch is great. Please let us know, because, I mean, we love connecting with other people who love British things the way we do.
Are you ready to guess your British word?
Oh, I'm so ready.
Every episode?
It's a mystery what this word is.
Every episode, I ask you a different British word.
Mm-hmm.
You, I think, to date have guessed two of them.
I think I've guessed them all.
Nope. I will make a supercut of all the times you got it wrong.
It's going to be very quick because it's 0 seconds.
Okay, this is your slang word. It's not so much of a word as it is a thing.
Okay.
Do you know...
But things have words.
What it... I know, it's just not one word, it's like a... Okay.
Okay, cool.
Do you know what Buck's Fizz is?
Buck's Fizz.
B-U-C-K-S space F-I-Z-Z. Buck's Fizz. Do you know what that is?
No, but I'm gonna guess, and I'm certain I'm right with this one. Buck's Fizz is beer. It's like Buccaneers brew. Like Buck's Fizz. So whenever you want to go down to the pub, you're like, do you want to get a Buck's Fizz? Like, you're feeling like a pirate that night. I don't know, Randy. You want to get Buck's Fizz.
Randy!
I mean, pirates get Randy. That's what, I mean, I'm certain that's what this word is.
That is incorrect. But again, as always, I love your guess. So Buck's Fizz... I always knew to be a band from the 80s, a pop group.
Oh, there's
a
makes pop sense group why called, I don't know.
They have that song called The Land of Make-Believe. It's the land of make-believe. You know that song?
Is that a theme song for something?
Maybe, probably.
I don't know.
But yeah, there's this cheesy band called Buck's Fizz from the 80s. Anyway, I don't know if they got their name from this or not, but in England, a Buck's Fizz is when you mix orange juice and champagne.
Oh.
Which is what we call a mimosa.
Yeah.
Why didn't you say it?
Oh, I thought you were gonna.
No, I was waiting for you to say it. Yeah, so I read that it was like, the definition that I read was like, it's similar to a mimosa, and then it listed the parts, and I was like, does anyone really measure the parts for a mimosa? I feel like...
Wait, so what's the difference? Is it mostly champagne with a splash of OJ?
I don't know. All I know is that I was like, I have never measured a mimosa in my life.
Interesting.
I just pour in the OJ and the champagne, and then I drink it. I don't measure that. But, yeah, that's what they call a mimosa, Buck's Fizz.
Yeah, maybe it is a pirate drink.
All right, well, this has been our Broadchurch episode. Kind of a long one, so thank you for sticking with us.
Kind of a serious one. We know this one is as funny as a lot of the other sitcoms we've done. So also thank you
for
sticking with us.
But it's such a good show.
It's so good. Yeah, if you listen to all of this and you still haven't seen it,
watch it
anyway. Like,
yeah, it's true.
You can learn. Or
it's amazing on a rewatch.
Rewatch it, yeah.
Yeah.
You pick up a lot.
I just think that the British do crime dramas very well.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, thank you for listening. You can hit us up on any of our social media channels. Also, if you have time, give us a rating or a review on iTunes. That would be amazing. We would love that.
It really helps us to be seen by other people.
Until next time, keep calm and give Olivia Colman more awards.